So in the spirit of good teaching, what I'd like you to do is turn and talk to the person next to you about what you visualized changing in your classroom at the end of the year. Please do that. Classes at Grand Valley State, and this young man behind me was in one of my classes, and we connected. And one of the coolest parts about being an educator is the impact you have on people's lives, young and older. I'm old, he is now. But it's so what we've done over the years, we've collaborated. I wrote a book a few years ago, and in fact, what you have in front of you is a business card around that book. But Aaron and I talked a lot about leadership, and what's cool from my perspective is when I walk into his classroom and I see on his wall learning, loving, learning, leading. Because those are really, from my perspective, the three keys in education. So if the sound works, so I want you to pretend the sound works. And I click on this button here right now, and what you hear is Huey Lewis singing The Power of Love. And I'm so...
Everybody get that in your
get that in Back to the Future. If I could sing, I would do it, but I can't. I'm going to screw it up. So the whole idea is there's a power in love, not that kind of love. So when I started talking about loving your kids about 20 years ago, my kids would say, love, you mean like, because I would say, I love you guys, and I mean, I love you. I would tell my athletes that, and I would tell my students that. And at first, they did not get what I was telling them, because their definition of love was this. Now, in the public school setting, I couldn't talk about my faith, so I had to live it. I had to model it. But I'll tell you right now, as a man of faith, I believe with every ounce of my being that we as educators are in the most unique position, next to parenting itself, to do this, to love on our kids. And you all are in an incredible position, as I was for 4 decades, to do that. But it has to take some intentionality.
I have a deep hope for my classroom. It's this idea of what you just talked about, which is, what do I want my classroom to look like by the end of the year? And my deep hope, it's really short. It all comes down to love. And you think about how the greatest commandment was love your Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. There's three things that I want my students to love. I want them to love their Creator. And because they love their Creator, they want to learn all about Him. I want them to love others. And some people miss it, but to love themselves. That's in the greatest commandment. So understanding that it really all comes down to love. And it's an overused word. We recognize that. I say I love Michigan football. Well,
blue.
Go blue.
Don't wait.
It's not the same.
I'm a Spartan grad. You can don't go down that road. How did you do that? You took this wonderful talk and you just...
So understanding that love.
Yeah. Good stuff. So on the way down here, I hope you don't mind, we had a conversation about, you know, what are Christian schools for? Is it teaching academics? Teaching about the faith? It was an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
And being a Catholic guy, Catholic school guy, it was interesting to hear the conversation about, you know, why do we have the schools that we have? What's the purpose of them? Is it for academics or is it for faith? The answer to that is yes. So my life changed completely a year ago. I had twin grandsons. And this little guy is George. And this is Will. His real name, if you will, is Robert William Siegel IV. He's named after my father, myself, my son. And there's a backdrop to that story. So when my daughter-in-law, when they were first married, my daughter-in-law, Catherine, said, Mr. Siegel, she still doesn't know what to call me. Isn't that the weirdest? It's the weirdest dynamic. Like, when I was a young guy getting married, it was Mom and Dad. Not so much anymore. Do I call him Bob? Or do I call him Dad? Or do I call him... Anyways, so really she doesn't call me anything usually. But she said, so if we have a firstborn, his name will be Robert William Siegel IV. And they came and they told us that they were pregnant. And I thought, well, it'd be kind of cool if it was a boy. And then 2 days later, well, they're twin boys. I'm like, oh, now what do we do? And it's not me, because I had nothing to do with the decision. And I remember praying, I'll never forget this moment. If it sounds corny, if you get to know me, you'll know it's not corny. I was in the basement, my son's basement. We were watching some sports game. And my brother was next to me for some dynamic there. And Robbie leaned over. Sorry. Gave me a hug and said, Dad, we decided the firstborn will be Robert William Siegel IV. And I cried like a baby. And I could feel my dad's presence in the room. I really could. I believe in that stuff. And I remember thinking, wow, you know. So these kids were born a year ago. And my life came full. Are any of you grandparents? Probably don't want to meet. Oh, you? Okay, good. I thought for sure I was the only one. But so life turns full circle. Here's what happens. Because when you have kids and they have kids, my life is, if I died today, I'd be completely at peace. I have grandsons. And the best thing is they live 5 minutes away from me. I can see them anytime I want. Well, guess what? Kids grow up. So this is them a year from their birth. And the reason I pull them into our conversation is that my mission, and one of the reasons that we retired, my mission is that Will and George find their element, their gift. What are they good at? What are they going to be good at? And my mission in life, and I told my son and daughter this open, I said, that's what my job is. I'm going to love them like no grandpa. I'm going to be the grandfather of the year. And I'm going to help teach them what sports they're good at or not good at, what academic areas they excel at, and I'm going to be a part of that because I can be. So when I see this picture, I picture Will looking out saying, is there a teacher out there that's going to love me, inspire me, and teach me how to be a leader, and teach me the gifts that I have, give me opportunities? That's what I see when I see that picture. Because kids deserve for us to love them, and in that process, help them find their gifts. Or as Ken Robinson would say, their element. Because we all have gifts. You have a gift, that's why you're here, you're a teacher. So our job is to help kids find their gifts. So, why did you become a teacher? Take a couple minutes, and you know what? I'm old enough where when I was asked this question, three reasons, June, July, and August. Well, now there's like, what, 5 weeks of summer vacation? I don't know how much you have, but can't use that anymore. But I want you to take a couple minutes. Why did you become a teacher? Take a couple minutes and jot, or you can even put in your, you don't have to write it down, but why did you become a teacher? And then when you're done, turn and share with your neighbor, please.
Our talents, our vocation. Okay? Yes.
Impact.
Impact you have on your students, on those around you. Greater impact that has beyond your school walls.
Got to go to a gym every day.
Getting paid to work out.
I take it you're a PE teacher?
Yeah.
There we go.
Really?
Yeah.
At-risk
populations.
Well, pardon?
At-risk populations.
Being able to serve those who are at the at-risk populations, yeah. Anybody
else
want to share?
It's real life, too.
Real life. It's real relationships. It's real kids. No one in here said to teach standards. No one in here said to get formative and summative assessments. I didn't hear anything about learning targets or district requirements. It sounds like it's all coming down to the kids. We understand we all have the same vision. It's to make an impact on youth. But if we're not teaching our youth how to make an impact beyond there, our impact becomes limited. So our mission as educators is, are we fostering that student leadership, that growth and creativity where we see a kid, the holistic kid, not the kid that bombed a math test, but finding their talents? Are we walking alongside of our students to help them understand those gifts that they have as well? I have a slew of books up here that I pulled some information from, and I disagree with reading from a slide, but I'm going to do that right now. This comes from relational leadership. We begin by following. There are no born leaders. We start out by following our parents, our siblings, older children in the neighborhood, and then somewhere along the line, whether we intend it or not, whether we want it or not, whether we realize it or not, people start following us. We become leaders, all of us. Now, we know as educators, we're leaders in our classrooms, but the leadership that's put out there by the world isn't the leadership that we want. We all follow, and we all lead. So are our students, when they leave our buildings, are they being that good leader? Because right now, the ripple effect is bad leadership by bad leadership by bad leadership. We want to make sure that that ripple, that those students that we teach, that that ripple is something that's positive, that's teaching servanthood, it's teaching love. Right now, that's not what's being shown to them.
So, as I mentioned, a few years ago, I wrote a book called Learn to Lead with Love. And the whole idea of it was to help share the message of how, if you're a loving leader, the impact you can have on people. And by people, I mean adults and children. Sometimes the impact we have on children and children and adults almost happen by happenstance. So there's a long story to this picture. So does anyone know where the Rockford Dam is in downtown Rockford? Or we're walking across it, because my building that I was a principal at was 1 mile away from downtown Rockford. And one of the hallmarks of decent leadership, at least, is to listen to good ideas from other people. So I had a teacher on a Wednesday, and I remember Wednesday because the funeral was Friday. I remember Wednesday a teacher saying, "Hey, Bob, there's a local serviceman, a soldier that died in duty, in the line of duty, and he's being buried downtown Rockford this Friday. Wouldn't it be cool if we all went down there to celebrate that, honor him? I'm like, so let me get this straight. 650 kids in my building, K-5. You want us to go downtown and honor this soldier? She said, yep. I said, well, that's a good idea. I don't know how we can pull it off. It's Wednesday. The funeral's Friday. So I pulled the staff together and said, Shannon has an idea. And so Shannon shared the idea. And guess what my staff did? Let's do it! Oh, great. I was almost thinking, how can we pull this off? So my next step was, well, let me check with my superintendent. So I called Mike Scheibler, who's a very Christian man. We were blessed to work together for 20 years. He said, do it! I'm like, okay, wait a minute. It's Wednesday afternoon now. He said, here's the only thing I need you to do. Make sure, obviously, that Pedersen Funeral Home is good with it. And make sure you call the chief of police, because there are two streets we had to cross. Not like busy streets, it's Rockford. But two little streets. And so the plan hatched. So Thursday we spent time talking to the kids about it. We had a little assembly about there's going to be guns going off and be cool. You know, that's why the guns are going off. And we shared the whole story that Thursday. Bless you. I found out that about 20 of our parents were either current. They were soldiers and veterans. They provided a flag for every single child in the school. So we started off Valley View by foot. Let's say the funeral was at 1 o'clock. We started at noon, I think. And I didn't realize how long it would take for 650 kids to go walk a mile. It takes a long time. Kindergartners are feeding like this. So what we did, one cool thing that we had going on in our school is this book buddy concept where the big kids read with the little kids. So they're walking in pairs. I'll never forget you guys walking down across the dam, downtown Rockford. I remember walking to the street, and the casket was actually in the middle of the street with the family around it. And they were holding up the funeral for us. And so imagine this group of, now it's about 1,000 people, because parents, everyone was into this now. We're walking down, and I remember lovingly surrounding the casket. And it was, when I think about it, I want to bawl. It was one of the most moving things in my life. And I remember the kids being so, they understood the gravity of what was going on. Even the kindergartners, no one made a peep. And I remember the guns going off, and I remember even the little stinkers understood the power of that moment. The power of serving and being available, responsiveness to this situation. I have a letter from the father of the soldier. If I read, I couldn't get through it if I read, because it's basically he said, what you did saved our family. Thank you, Bob, so much. And the only reason I got the letter is I happen to be the principal. But the point is, we taught our kids the value of service, the value of being a compassionate leader.
And imagine that ripple effect that creates. And it really took just one leader saying, yes, we will do this. Yes, we will take time out of our day to something that's more important. And the ripple effect that can create. I mean, that's a lot of kids. And then you talk about the adults, 1,000. But imagine what that community saw. They saw people that truly loved each other and that wanted to be there to support them.
Why don't you take a seat? When I see people staying, I feel like they're going to come and give me or something. So, there's a couple chairs. Can you guys help them find a seat, please? So if you want to read a great book, Lynchpin is really, really good. If anyone read it, it's a great book. He's a blogger too. And he says that schools should teach two things, and I believe this, problem solving and leadership. In your situation, of course, you can weave faith into that. Although I would, and I don't know, Aaron, how you feel about this, but we haven't talked about it. In terms of leadership, I'm talking faith leadership. That's a skill, it's not a gift.
And you're not going to hear us say servant leadership too much today, because that's a bit of a redundant term for us. If you're going to be a leader, you're servant. That's what leadership is.
But you're not born with it, as we've talked about. You learn how to do it, and schools can teach that as much as they can teach anything, including compliance. These are some of the sources that we used. So take your pen and paper out, please. Write down from your perspective as you're sitting here, what are the top five things that you think kids should leave our schools, top five skills? Don't put reading or writing. Let's assume they learn how to read and write and do math. So don't put reading, writing, or math, please. Let's assume that. What are the top five skills that you think kids should have when they leave our schools and go up into life? Top five skills, please.
Go and throw out some of those skills, whatever that you think kids need to leave your building with.
Empathy.
Empathy, okay.
Can you teach that?
Yeah.
How do you teach empathy?
Modeling it.
Sorry, who said it? How do you, not to put you on the spot, but how do you think you could teach that?
Yeah. Well, we have a curriculum in our school called Second Step that kind of addresses it. Gives just kind of situational
good
types of things on having to be aware of what areas of life just are need empathy.
What else?
Perseverance.
Are you putting my spelling on that?
Maybe.
Perseverance.
Don't tell me if I spell things wrong. What else?
Communication,
yeah.
Serving.
Service.
Respect.
Know themselves.
Their own strengths.
Yeah, I love it. Self-understanding.
Teamwork.
That strange concept of how to love others.
You mean it's not all about me?
Critical thinking.
Responsibility.
Right. Give me one more.
Faith in God.
What's that?
Faith in God.
They had to come out in this group, I would hope.
No, I know Bob said that we were looking for things outside of reading, math. Look at these things that come up. Empathy. Perseverance, communication. Some of the people would call these soft skills. I mean, minus the faith portion, they would call these soft skills. Like, it's not something we directly teach, but along the way we hope to have a lesson or two that works on one of these. And we both agree, we hate the term soft skills. If you think about the workforce, you think about, I call it real life because we know inside of our schools it's a bit different. In real life, these are things that every person should have. If they do, they're probably going to be a pretty good person. They're probably going to be a pretty good worker. Empathy. How many of us have directly taught empathy in our classrooms? Think about that for a second, right? Or have we given our children enough opportunities to communicate beyond just themselves? How do we teach respect? How do we teach love? Some of this, it really comes down to how we model it for our students. Because empathy is a tough thing to teach a child. How do I get a child to think as someone else and to feel as that person? Model it. Show it. Do it. Be transparent. Something's happening in your life that's absolutely awful. Be transparent about it. Our students want to know that we're real people. So let them know the things that are happening. Obviously within reason, but if there's something that's happening in your life, share it with them. And let, give them that opportunity to say, wow, I understand where you're coming from. I understand the hurt that you have. We have to model these things. Even though they're soft skills, we got to teach these things.
It can't be tested. How do you test empathy? Can you take it on a SAT test? Is there an empathy piece? I don't think so. How about, like, on the M step, is there a part on there about respecting each other? No. So unfortunately, in education, I'm talking just globally education, our focus is completely messed up. Our priorities and how we spend time in the classrooms is messed up for the most part. It really is. Because what we should be teaching kids are these things. Now, I know our jobs depend on teaching kids the academics, but guess what? You can weave these skills into your classroom. A book I highly recommend, after you read my book, a book I highly recommend that you read is called Leader in Me. It's written by the Covey, Sean Covey, Seven Habits of Mind, whatever. So our school adopted this for 2 years, and we taught our kids how to be leaders. Yes, kindergartners can set goals. They can become leaders. Leader in Me. What I recommend that you do is have it be a book study in your school. It's very powerful. The principal in the book, she was leading a charter school, and her charter school was failing. And so what she decided to do is figure out ways to help things. So she went to a conference about Leader in Me. And she came back and she realized this is what she needed to do in her school. She did a survey of her parents. Guess what all her parents wanted their kids to learn? Guess where academics were, test scores were on the parent wish list? Bottom. Because you know what parents assume? They assume that their kids are going to learn how to read and write and do math. They assume that. And for good reason, they will. Sometimes by osmosis. They will. They'll learn it. But what parents really want for their kids is to grow up to be really good people. Even the worst parent, I don't know if there is such thing as the worst parent, they want their kids to be successful when they leave school. We've been called to a higher purpose. And if you haven't thought about this lately, please do today. Next to parenting itself, what we do is the most important work on earth. Think about it. Parents drop their kids off at our door, and they leave them with us, sometimes on purpose, for 8 hours. They think, thank God someone's there to watch my kids. But they trust us for eight. We see their kids more than they do during the school year. Maybe if you total up, I bet they're in school more than they're home. They're sleeping when they're home. But the point is that what we do is really, really important, you guys. So I put together a little graphic. Truth be told, my secretary did this, but these are my ideas. So if you look at teaching, first is us adopting a learning mindset. Do you know everything there is to know about leading and learning and teaching? No, none of us do. I'm constantly learning. By the way, keep reading. Reading, it just keeps invigorating you. So constantly learning. And the other thing about what good leadership, good teachers do is they constantly learn how to lead better. Peer teaching, working, collaborating with each other, focusing on strengths. And the foundation of everything is love. This is the key part to this. Because learning and leading won't result in anything unless the foundation is love. Loving on your kids. And like I heard someone else say, love yourself too. That's really important. And why do we do all this? For this little guy. This is the fifth Allbach that went through my school. Everything we do has to be focused on the child. Everything we do. It's never about us. So it starts with us. Because if we don't adopt this mindset of loving leadership, the kids can never learn it, ever.
In fact, my storyline for my class, those three words, loving period, learning period, leading period, which I see that Johnson Christian's using now too. I like to think that I started it, but it comes down, if you can't love first, and that's love for our Creator, you're not going to learn. Why would you learn? Learning's nothing unless you have that love for the Creator and you want to learn more about Him. And then you can't lead until you've learned to love. And you can't lead until you've learned how to lead. So it's that, there's a reason for the hierarchy of loving is first.
So in my book, I write about the key parts, in my opinion, about leadership. One is relationship building. You are not going to be a successful teacher, leader, anybody, unless you focus on connecting with the people that you lead. So right now, you know that exercise I had you do to picture your kids? If there's a child or two that you haven't connected with, make it your goal Monday to today. It's really important that we build relationships with all of our kids. And some kids it's hard to connect with because they're who they are. I mean, but the goal of all of us should be to develop relationships with those that we lead. Having a service approach, having a service mindset as you lead. Bless you. And by the way, when I wrote my book, the book was for adults to read, but I want to emphasize that we as leaders need to pass this on to our kids. We can teach kids how to collaborate. Put your kids in groups. PE, have them play in teams. You know, teach them how to play in teams. Teach them how to work in teams. Because guess what? In the real world, that's what they have to do. Develop a spirit of gratitude, thankfulness. Always being thankful for everything that happens to you in the school, in this classroom, wherever it is. Being thankful. Having a presence. You know, if a child comes up to you and you're at your computer, lift your hands off the key, please, and look at them and say, "How can I help you, honey?" Or do what I did a lot when people came to my office. I'd say, let me hit the send key, because this is really important. Boom. Turn it down. How can I help you? Have a presence about you. Kids deserve us, and adults deserve us to be present. But the key part really to this is to respond once you're present. The funeral that we went to, that was probably the most responsive thing I've ever done in my life. And the kids saw it. They were part of that. Being inspirational to your kids. You're going to hear more about that before you leave us. Giving kids the motivation and the belief in themselves is really important. And having a sense of humor. You don't have to be a stand-up comic, but you do have to be able to be self-deprecating and not take yourself too dang seriously.
Amen.
Here's the thing. School is really important, but sometimes we approach school like it's just work. Shouldn't kids have fun when they go to school? Shouldn't kids walk into school and go, this is fun? And guess what? Research shows when kids or adults enjoy what they're doing, achievement skyrockets because they're in a safe place. So I do have to tell some funny stories. So as a principal, I would often walk around the building, and I did that a lot because I'm ADHD. So anyways, I'd walk around the building, and I would have to go to the bathroom. So I walk into the boys' bathroom one day. And ladies, I don't know if you know what boys bathroom, they have urinals, and then there's stalls, right? Anyways, so I'm at the urinal, and I look over, and I see these two little feet hanging over. I can see the feet, and I can, you know, so I can tell there's a little guy in the stall. And how Carter did that, he kept his butt, and he got his head cocked under. "Hey, Mr. Siegel, what are you doing in here?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to the bathroom just like you." "No, you're not. You're going number one, and I'm going number two." So, this incredibly verbal child, we're having this conversation. I'm thinking, am I in like handed camera? I mean, like, God, I hope not, because we're in the bathroom. Anyways, so I get done, I wash my hands, and I'm leaving, and I think we're done, but no, we're not done. He says, one more time, under the stall, "Mr. Siegel?" "Yes, Carter." "I want you to know I will always consider this a treasured moment. Thank you very much." So hard coming down the hallway that my secretary thought I was like somebody dying or something. I was that. But just be able to laugh. Kids deserve us to laugh and have fun. So real quick, what you'll see with a lot of teacher evaluation models now. Have you heard of 5D? That's one of the new teacher models. It's focusing on kids learning, not teachers teaching.
I think we already went over the external leader in me. That was the soft skills that they want from the real world, yeah.
So chapter 1 of my book, it's all about relationships. It's
It's huge. It's the most important thing that we can do as educators. Okay, so this is one thing I do want you to do. I want you to think about who your favorite teacher was. Take 2 minutes, think about, no names, think about who your favorite teacher was and why. Favorite teacher and why.
Somebody that was a part of your life and may still be. And enough to the point that you ended up becoming a teacher just like me. There's something to that.
Aaron, I'm going to interrupt. You know, I think your goal should be, I'm going to tell you what your goal should be. How arrogant of me, huh? My goal for you should be that when your kids are in a situation like this and they're asked, who is your favorite teacher, they think of you. I want you to consider that a moment. So picture your kids right now, picture them as adults, and picture someone asking, who was your favorite teacher? Do they say you? I think that's a good goal. It's not a popularity contest, you guys, but have you connected with your kids in that manner, in that fashion? And if you haven't, think about how you can, please.
I pulled this from the book, The Innovator's Mindset. We did this as a book study as a school. And I love this line. We talk about the why in learning. For all my PBL people out there, you have to start with the why, because then everything else makes sense. Education's why is to develop learners and leaders who create a better present and future. Yeah. But if you're not focusing on that leadership piece, you're ignoring it and say, hey, you're going to learn this stuff, now go do, and you don't teach them how to lead while doing, it falls apart. And especially, they talk about with an innovator's mindset, but leading with empathy, meeting people where they are, help them to find or create solutions that work for them. We need to know our students to be empathetic with them. So you have to build a relationship. And to develop those relationships, you show them how much you care. And I know that people go and they see their students outside the classroom, they go into any of those extracurriculars. But without that relationship, everything you're doing means nothing. And that is the same for your students with each other. So, from another book, I guess I only have time to read it, it seems. This is from The Best Year Ever. This is by a Michigan Teacher of the Year several years ago. And he said, in order to build relationships, you got to break down some walls. You got to take time to play. So, my first 2 weeks in the classroom, we don't get to any curriculum. We work on playing. We work on things like team building. We sometimes WAPS, which is a game with a purpose. But what we're doing is intentionally taking time with our students so that they can see who we are and they can see who each other are outside of this whole learning environment, which they're learning during it. So an example I have here, these are pictures from my class last year. I took time just to play games. And I know some of you are like, standards. Well, if my students get to know who they are, each other are, they get to know who themselves are. When we break down walls, when we allow risk-taking and put cards on the back of people's backs and just go around and talk and have a good time. Or purposely give them something that's frustrating. That's called helium hula hoop. It's a hula hoop. That's it. But when everyone's fingers are lifting it up, it just goes all over the place. Giving them opportunities to fail in a safe environment. That's how you build relationships. But you have to do it intentionally. You can't just say, well, I'm going to let my kids work in groups, and that's good enough. No, you've got to teach them those skills. Look at these things that you said that important. We got to teach them communication. You have to teach them service. In these games, with a purpose, I teach them respect. These are awesome opportunities, and that's how you build relationships.
So one of the things that as a principal I understood is how important it is for me to build up the adult teachers and how important it is for the teachers to love on each other. And the more that you can support each other, and here's the thing about that. Do you think kids watch us interacting with each other?
Yeah.
Here's the scary thing. They watch everything you do. When you don't think they're watching you. Do they watch you walk by someone in the hallway and not greet them? A colleague? Yes, they do. They see that. Do they see you go to a neighboring teacher and ask for something and politely say, "Can I please borrow?" and say, "Thank you very much." Do they watch you do that? Yep. So my point is that you should support each other because it's a hard job. The more you can team and collaborate, but also it's great modeling for your kids.
This is a picture of the graduates that Bob had taught or had the opportunity to be a principal of. Look, they all came back. His building's K-5. So there's several
years.
Kids
at Lightman's, like 100 kids. No, I'm just kidding.
But that's the impact. If we build those relationships, we actually get to know our kids. They know we care. But if you're not letting them know you care, they're not going to learn. So we have to build those relationships. And that's a big thing with leadership anyways. If I wanted to say thank you to a fellow teacher, and I gave that teacher a gift card to a brewery, and it turns out that teacher's husband is a recovering alcoholic, my gratitude just fell apart. If you know the person...
If you give that gift card to me.
But if you know the person, you'd be like, all right, I know this person well enough that this is the perfect way to express my gratitude. And then they accept it as gratitude, not as an insult.
This is one of my favorite educational sayings if you hadn't heard before. I try to internalize it. Because when you mentioned, you thought about who your favorite teacher was, here's my guess. It was their EQ, their emotional quotient, that triggered them in your thoughts, and not their IQ. Because teachers, we all have college degrees, we're smart enough to do our jobs, but when kids know that you care about them, that whole teacher-student relationship goes to a whole nother level.
So let them know you care. We know you care about them. Tell them. Show them. Fair is not equal. Biggest way I teach this, I give all my kids a card that says a different disease or a broken bone, a scraped knee, and then I tell them to share what their card said. It had some sort of injury, and then I hand them each a Band-Aid. And I said, "Did that solve your problem?" They said, "No." I'm like, "Well, that was fair. But I want to treat you all individually, not here's a Band-Aid." Because that only fixes some problems. And Bob's rule of thumb, and I think all of us would agree with this, teach these children like they're your own children. Sometimes we have to teach hard life things. But remember, these are your extended family, your adopted family of sons and daughters. Teach them like they're your own.
I was guilty of treating my students better than my own kids sometimes. I don't know if you guys ever do that, but I have. So the social contract's a big deal, Aaron.
Yeah, social contracts. Some call them classroom covenants. This is how I'm going to treat you. This is what I expect in return. But then for those who don't know, it's just a list of positive things that should be happening in your class. And if they don't happen, then there's usually some sort of a consequence. I like to say consequences are positive, negative. If these things are happening, then all of our hopes are being met. When we don't do those things, all of our fears are being met. And we make sure at the beginning of our year to express our hopes and fears for the year. But I want to go a step further and tell you, put leadership into your social contracts. Make it an expectation of your students. As a member of this class, we are going to be leaders. And we're called to be leaders as Christians. The Great Commission. So put it in there. Be and set a good example. Have an attitude of gratitude. And this one up here comes from Best Year Ever. His was attendance, effort, and attitude. If you were doing those three things, you'd have the best year ever. Attendance, I don't have that issue at our school. So I said, if we trust God, and if we put forth our best effort, and if we have a positive attitude, we're going to have the best year ever. I won't be your best teacher. I'm not going for that. I'm looking for your best fifth grade ever. So making sure that you put leadership into your social contract. Don't be afraid to have that expectation of your students.
So communication is pretty obvious. To me, body language on the bottom there is maybe the most important. How you carry yourself when you're interacting with kids. Are you in an open stance? With little ones, if you get down and look and they're not in their face, but you know, at their level, body language is really important. It's one of the most misunderstood forms of communication there is. So think about how your body is when you're with kids. Do you look interested or do you look disinterested? Kids need us to be engaged.
And then teach communication to your students. On my social contract, I had 2 years, one mouth, because God was giving us a sign that we're supposed to listen more than we talk. So teach your students to have eye contact. Teach your students how to speak to one another with grace, and then model it. Bob already mentioned this. If I'm on my computer and a student comes up to me, if I'm still on my computer answering that question, I'm communicating something whether or not I want to. And that is, I'm not as interested in what you have to say than what this email says. So teach these skills. Teach them to listen. Teach them to listen with their eyes. Okay. Yeah, because we're down to 10 minutes, but we got to talk about
it. Servant leadership. So that is about, so when I was a principal, I would do anything for my kids within reason. Even dress up like Elvis if they got turned on a box top. So, but my least favorite was when I had to be a ballerina. I told the kids I'd be a ballerina. And I remember walking into a fifth grade classroom, and a fifth grade boy said, "Mr. Siegel, have you no self-respect?" Because I did look really corny. Yeah, it was kind of embarrassing. And I said, "Well, why am I doing this?" And he said, "Because you said you would." I said, "Correct. You met your goal, and I'm showing you what integrity is all about by acting like an idiot right now," basically what I did. So, but serving your kids every day, what if you stood in front of your kids and said, "My only goal today is your success. That's why I'm here. Your success."
I did this with my students at the end of last year. To teach, and again, I don't like using the term servant leadership, but servanthood. As leaders, we're called to serve. If you're going to be a correct leader, you're serving. And I have my students wash each other's feet. And I know this is a common practice within our faith. I don't know if you've ever tried it with your students. I know that Gretchen has with her sixth graders when she taught sixth grade. It's showing them that I'm willing to do whatever it takes for you. I'm willing to give all of me to you. So finding opportunities to serve.
One of the cool things about being able to talk to you all about this concept is that people of faith in schools of faith, I can tell you that we have the perfect model of how to lead with love. We have the perfect model of how to lead with love. He walked on this earth and he taught us all kinds of things about how to be a loving leader through his parables, through everything from washing to the feet. So like, how awesome is it that we have someone to look to? Like, this is how you lead with love. Oh. And then you're able to share that with your kids by how you behave and how you talk and what you do. What a cool opportunity that you have. And again, we have that model. And you can talk about that in your classrooms. I couldn't. I had to only model it, which worked. But you have an incredible opportunity to talk about it too with your kids. Not about me.
So seeking first to understand before trying to be understood. That's one of the 7 habits. If you haven't read the 7 habits that Leader in Me is based on, it's an amazing book. And this year I've been using that as my platform for teaching leadership. So I am intentionally teaching my students the 7 habits of highly effective people. But then along the way, while I'm teaching a habit and going through activities on a habit, I'm starting to insert some of those other things that leaders should have. And one of those is listening first, then speaking, because we have 2 ears, 1 mouth.
Aaron, can you bump up to the slide that has all of them? Keep going. We're running out of room. Collaboration. Right there. So these are the 7 habits in the book, because these are the 7 habits of mine. And what we did at Valerie is we took a habit a month, and we did things. I read books to the kids. We taught kids how to be proactive, how to begin with the end of the mind. We taught kids how to do this.
And you wouldn't believe the parent response. The parents loved us teaching their kids how to be leaders.
I've got students going home and putting little reminders on their mirror saying, be proactive. I'm in charge of my own feelings today, and I can choose to be happy. I have students that already, before I've even taught any of these others, they're like, I need to put first things first. I know that I need to spend my time on this first before this. And all I've done is mention it a few times in the classroom. So it's that intentionality of teaching leadership. I found that this is making it easier to teach leadership because I have a foundation. But here, leaders in the classroom, here are some things that I've done when intentionally teaching leadership. I put quotes on the board, one or two a week. I have the kids write them down, and they're all leadership-based. But I don't tell them what it means. I have them interpret it because I don't want to be the source of all of their knowledge and leadership. I want them to interpret the quotes. So I'll have quotes from John Wooden to presidents and writers. I just think of John Wooden right away because that was the first one I started with. And then give your students opportunities to lead by asking them, how do you want to lead? What do you want to do? And you'd be surprised. They'll come up with things, service projects. They'll come up with a buddy system. My students last year said, we want to create a tunnel when all the kids leave on Friday and cheer them as they leave the school. So I said to my fifth graders, okay, go ahead and do it. So they went out there, they put their hands up, and they were cheering every kid that left the elementary wing that day. And I'll tell you, that makes an impact. And the impact continues when I tell my students, you know, good leaders are gracious. Make sure you say please and thank you. Last year, my fifth graders holding the door open for each other. Thank you, thank you. Now I heard the fourth graders doing, and the third graders, because they hear that all the time. I have the opportunity to bring leaders into the classroom. And then I actually recorded the interview, and I had my students ask the questions that they prepared. Same set of questions for every leader. And then we started to compare. What things did this leader say that this leader said that are the same? And then you start identifying those traits of leadership. I didn't once last year tell them, this is what leadership means. I let them listen to other leaders. I let them read about leadership. They went on to blogs. They had opportunities to be leaders with their buddies. And then they defined leadership. They came up with a huge share sheet of traits that every leader should have. And the best part is, I didn't have to tell them. They experienced it themselves. And then take time. If you're going to say that leadership's important, I took an entire day for team building in the middle of the year. And then I had two hour sessions where I brought in someone from our community at one of the local churches to have some leadership training, teaching the kids to first lead themselves, then to lead their peers, then to lead the world. That slow release. If I can lead myself, I can start to lead others.
So it starts with us.
Keep going.
Yeah, please. All right. One more slide. So these are all the skills that you can teach. Collaboration is a big part of it. Really, and there's only one more slide that I want. Yep, leading with gratitude.
Oh, and this is show gratitude, teach the gratitude, and then let them lead it. I haven't started this yet in my class, but Thankful Thursdays. Find someone to thank. Find different ways to thank them. One teacher at our school, we did a Flipgrid. And I had every student create a Flipgrid for that. That's just a little one-minute video. And then I sent it to that teacher, and she had 22 videos of students that were thankful for her. Imagine the impact that made on that person. Imagine the impact it made on each of those students, understanding that, wow, my teacher takes time to say thank you to people. Maybe I should do the same.
There's only one more slide that I want them. Being accessible is important. Open door.
Just tell me when.
Yep, keep going.
We plan.
That's a picture from the funeral.
We plan way too much, which is good. Okay.
You rather overplan, right, everybody? Right here. Can you read this two or three times, please? This is the last slide I want you to read for me. Summarize, it's more important when kids are learning what we think about their learning than what they think about their learning themselves. That's the power in our position.
It's huge. It's almost everything. It's all-encompassing. Aaron, you have a final slide?
Final thing is this. I have the books that I've sampled from here to help this. If you want to come up and take a picture or page through it. Bob has many books here about his style of leadership, that learning to lead with love. I've read through the book a couple times myself. It's very much worthy of a read.
$10.
And worth using in your classroom as well. Thank you so much for your time, for listening to our message.
God bless. Have a great day, everyone.